22, June 1972, location Khantoum, the CP of the 23rd Auburn Infantry Division. Could you give your full name and rank, please?
Edgar F. Birch, Major.
Your job title?
The Operations Advisor.
How long have you been in the staff?
Oh, I don't know, about 6-7 months.
Mm-hmm. Okay, for the Battle of Khantoum, could you just broadly sketch the defenses of the city in terms of what forces you had here when the fighting first began in earnest?
The first is
down a battalion level.
When it began in earnest, it was the complete 23rd Infantry Division, plus units from the local RF and PF, Khantoum province.
In terms of battalions, how many battalions would you say you had to defend the city at that particular time? This was mid-May. Including the battalions, say battalion equivalents you had in RFPF.
Yeah, the RFPF is kind of hard for me to describe because Colonel Esplin only has a better idea of that. They say they had 5,000 RFPF. I'm not really sure.
Okay.
We had in excess of 12 battalions in the 23rd Division, if you count the troop of the 8th Cav that was up here, and the recon companies and units from the different regiments, plus the 4 battalions in each regiment.
How many tanks did you have?
I had very little bit, but we had about 9 that ran, about 11 total.
From your understanding of what Khantoum is, what do you think would be the weakest point? In other words, if you're going to attack Khantoum, where would you have attacked the weakest part of the city to defend?
Oh, I think that the way they came was, it's about the, I don't know about the weakest, but it's about the best avenues of approach for what they were after. Any time, of course, you find a coordination line, that was, unfortunately, we had a lot of problem with the running up QL-14, what we call a broken bridge out north of town. There was a small gap in there that was necessary in the way we had the forces put, and they caused a lot of trouble up in there, so right northwest of town.
Okay, where would you say would be the best part of Khantoum that was best defended? In terms of which regiments are the best ones as opposed to the...
Oh, I don't know. That's just a matter of opinion. I think they all did a pretty good job. The 44th and the 45th, maybe a little stronger than the 53rd, but that's just a matter of opinion. I spent some time with the 53rd before, and I know they've shown a lot of improvement.
How long were you with the 53rd?
I was 3 months.
As an advisor?
Right.
Okay. What was the reaction here when you heard about the tanks up at Tonkin?
Now, I wasn't here when the tanks were at Tonkin. You know, the 22nd Division was up there. I was home on emergency leave. But when I got up here on the 5th of May, they knew the tanks were in the area. And I don't think that Arvin seemed to really... Or, you know, tank was an item, I won't say not too concerned. He was concerned, but he didn't seem to be panic-stricken by the thing. And the morning of the 14th, when he destroyed some with mines and also the law, from that day on, he had confidence that he could destroy them, plus the tow that was airborne tow that came in.
Okay, the morning of the 14th is when most people generally think the Battle of Khantoum began.
The major part of it, I'd say that is right.
Would you describe what happened on that day and what you were doing?
Yeah, about, I can't remember the times exactly, but...
we can get that out of
the journal. Units at that time were a little further away from the city, and we had 2 battalions that had conducted a combat assault kind of behind some of the enemy frontline units, and they were coming back toward town.
This was in the north?
Right, up the north on the east side of the road. And up to the west side, we had the 44th Regiment at that time, and they came under heavy ground attack and armor, plus we had a fair amount of artillery being fired. Not like it was later, but a pretty fair amount.
How many artillery units did you have here in the city?
Oh, something like 24 or 26 105s and about 4 155s.
Plenty of ammunition.
Oh, yeah. Ammunition at that time, wasn't it? And we'd known the thing was coming from intelligence that they got. And at about 3:30, we put our helicopter up in the air. And he stayed up until 5 o'clock. And about 5 or 5:15, I think it really started in earnest. And they had an artillery forward observer in the helicopter. And I think that was one of the key points, because right quick he could... Carry adjusted artillery fire into the where the people really were. You could see the tanks firing, you know, from the air.
This is a CNC for the division?
Our CNC. It used to be parked up here when it was safe to park them up here at night. And he took off at, like I say, 3:30, quarter to 4. He had our Air Force ALO on board and an artillery forward observer. And that was really a key point because right away he could get adjusted fire on the enemy. And it really helped, I think, in a large amount to thwart the attack on the 14th. It was a major attack, I think, but it was nothing like came later, you know. And I'd say the regiment maybe a little more attacked. And they did a pretty good job, and they didn't have to fall back. They kept their positions.
Did they make any inroads at all into the city on that day?
No inroads in the city. This is all about 4, 5, 6 out.
So they only attacked in one direction at that particular time?
Well, there was harassment from, I can't remember exactly. I remember that was the main one. I'd have to look along.
What about the overall defense of the city? Did the province have divided responsibility with the division commander?
No, the division commander was overall responsible for the whole thing.
To include the RFP?
To conclude, yes. They were controlled by the province chief. The province chief was responsible to the, and basically it was broken down that the province chief and the secretary would take the southern part of town and the division would take the northern, the most expected avenues of attack.
Right. What was the largest caliber anti-tank weapon that they had here for defense? 90 millimeter or tow?
Oh, they had a couple of 106s and we had tows. Two 106s, tows, of course, had the 76 millimeter gun on the tank.
Okay, after the fighting died down on the 14th, could you describe the general run of events up until the next major day?
Right, there, it was a kind of a continuous thing, and out further, and there had been some inroads and in the flanks out there that they were trying to dislodge, and we got the two battalions back into the area where we needed them from the ones that were north and east of the road up there.
Did they move in on foot?
Right, they came back on foot, and
they were from Red Regiment again.
They were from I don't remember. It couldn't have been the 44th. It was either the 45th or the 53rd, though.
Just something you can check out in the show. Okay, are you getting attacked by fireworks on this time?
Right, and they were probes, recons, this and that, and an increased amount of activity every now and then into direct fire by tanks upon somebody. The 45th at this time then moved out, they switched battalions out there and pulled the 44th back in reserve. And the 45th kept getting quite a few attacks in their area. There was a lot of activity. That's where most of the activity was. Up until such time that we decided that, I don't remember the exact date, that they ought to pull back in and consolidate the area. Now, again, I'm a little confused on the time, but we had an attack that was, I don't know. I have to read the log. I'm getting a little bit confused with the thing. There was a time when we had some people of the 45th was out there, and we had to bring them back so that we got a smaller perimeter to go all the way around the town, and it was more locked together.
During this first period of activity, did you consider the possibility that you might have to be reinforced, or did you think you had adequate forces here to contain any enemy attack?
I know there was talk of reinforcing one way or the other.
Who could think that you've been reinforced by?
I don't know. I heard that there was some of the Rangers might have come up here, and that's the only ones that I ever heard about specifically, that at one time they carried on the map a Ranger unit that was a Ranger battalion that was going to come up, but they never came.
Okay, after the 14th, would you go on to the next high point of enemy activity?
Okay, about the morning of the 26th was the real high point. I mean, it was kind of constant level in between the 14th and the 26th, but nothing really serious. The morning of the 26th, we had another large attack, and this was followed that night by infiltration into the town of probably about two battalions of sappers and some infantry that came in from the south and got in around the airfield.
This was the area where the RFP happened.
RFPF, and it was their responsibility. Of course, they were reinforced by division in the end to get them out, and the division, assistant division commander took charge of the thing in the end to get the people out from around the southern part of town in the airfield.
During the time up to the second high point on the 26th, was the airfield still open?
The airfield was closed. Yeah, it was open. The airfield was open until about, I think, the 26th. Morning of the 26th, whenever the people came in there, we finally had to close it. We were operated that night.
C-130s.
C-130s.
I noticed they were operating at night. The general there, were they using a low-level extraction or just
landing
and unloading?
Landing and unloading. And we had a captain and a sergeant out there, and they were stuck for the better part of the day because after the last 130 took out, before they could get back in, they restored the situation a little bit, and then it deteriorated further. And at that time, that was the attack that they penetrated up by the airborne compound up by the 44th Regiment, which is still up there, and over on a compound on the east, they came in, and they had a regimental headquarters plus a couple, three battalions up there. A large portion of anti-aircraft guns. Most of the anti-aircraft guns that were captured later in that area, and that's somewhere in the neighborhood of 20.
What kind were they?
51 calibers. There were some 7.62 anti-aircraft guns and one 14.5 inch.
Nothing higher than that?
Huh?
Nothing larger than that?
Nothing larger than that. There was 37 fire reported, but it was all further north.
Yeah, I saw the journal entry there.
Okay, could you describe the sequence of events of the fighting from the 26th on?
Well, they got into the areas up there. The enemy appeared, even in the journal, it's a little confused as whether they got evicted one time after the 26th or not. I don't think they did. They got in around the airborne compound, consolidated a little bit better on the 27th, and then they also, northwest of town, there was a penetration in between two units. And then that's about as far as they ever got. But if you look at the map of the city, that was a pretty big portion, you know, that they had enemy in and that they were in control of. And it kept it that way until such time as Arvin spent the better part of the next 10 days clearing the situation up.
Now, what means did you use to get the civilians under control before that? Were they evacuated from the city?
That was a province responsibility. And I don't know how many they evacuated.
Okay, what would you say would be the crisis point on the fighting that took place after 26th, where it might have gone one way or the other?
Somewhere in the night of the 27th, I think. I had to check again the log, but about the 27th, it was pretty hairy for a while.
Why was that? What happened?
They'd made some pretty good penetrations in there, and the fighting had been a strain on Arvin. You know, he was getting kind of tired, and it started, I don't know if it was the night of or the morning, but there was one period of time that the log will tell you that it probably could have gone one way or the other, but the division commander got on the ball, you know, and they stabilized the thing.
Is that where they asked how many people were commercial were still in function?
What was that?
I see a journal entry there where they want to know how many Americans were still in contact.
I don't remember that. We started keeping a people report all along. We had X number of people, and one evening, like I say, there was, and I don't remember if it was 26 or 7, but they were a little concerned. Mr. Mann, I think, was, and General Hill, and the Colonel, and us.
Do you know anything about the two C-130s that were shot down?
Neither one of them shot down, and I know quite a bit about them, yeah.
Would you mind describing what happened?
Yeah, they were unloading. One of them, he just touched down, and some artillery came pretty close, and he decided it was time to go, and he hadn't raised his ramp, and he hadn't unloaded, and the runway just wasn't long enough to take off in that configuration, and he hit a brick factory down there, dragging his ramp as he tried to get up. Of course, that did him in. The second one,
any of them get up?
Yeah, the co-pilot got out, burnt, and I can't remember how many. I think there was a total of five people on it, and three were killed. But the other one came in, and I was out there at the time. He had hydraulic failure, and he said he couldn't take off, and he parked right smack dab on the parking ramp, and that was also the center of impact for 95% of the rounds that came in, and it was, we told him if he didn't get it out by 6 in the morning, it wouldn't be there by nightfall, and mechanic came at 6, and 9 o'clock they started shelling, and they hit it and burned.
Anybody get killed?
No, it was not a crash, and neither one of them were really caused by, they weren't shot down. The first one that crashed might have been hit, but it was wild, you know, he just took off too fast with the runway hit.
How about helicopters? Have the helicopters been receiving a lot of heavy fire around?
Yeah, they have. I think so. Had a couple of Loaches shot down. None of them too real close to the city. Of course, we had to close MACB pad out here for a while because they were under small arm fire. About anywhere they came in to land up here, they had a pretty good chance of taking fire. And, of course, the gunships and tow and everybody, and all the aircraft up here by the 44th compound was under anti-aircraft fire. And a couple of them got hit from time to time, but the Loaches and got hit quite a bit.
Would you describe your counterpart in terms of his stability and so
my counterpart? Yes. My counterpart's a major by the name of Fung.
Uh-huh.
And he's the outstanding Arvin soldier that I've ever seen. He's an amazing individual. Right
G3
now he's,
or?
He's the G3, assistant G3. He's assistant G3 and he's a damn good man. He's sick right now. He was at one time the 45th Regimental G3, or an S3, and he has a reputation in the division of being one of the best ones they have.
Okay, what do you think threw the balance in our favor after the 26th?
I think there's two things that the whole time did it. First of all, the Arvin held them in place and the amount of air we were able to bring on. Both B-52s, which were a decisive factor, the TAC air, claw, the tow-mounted missile.
Right.
Tow missile.
What about the...
You took rounds of 105. About how many tubes did the enemy ever...
I don't know. That's a pretty hard question to ask. You don't know if they had one and they moved it around. I don't know how many they had. I know there was one concentration in a place we called Rocket Ridge, which was northwest of town. And during the big attack on the 26th, all kinds of stuff came from that, both artillery and rocket fire.
Was
it pretty hard.
Adjusted fire, you think?
Well, it had been adjusted before. These people take a day or two or three, you know, to start adjusting the fire. And you could see it in, you know, earlier it had been adjusted into the places they wanted to hit. And I don't know how many tubes they had. It's just too hard to tell.
How about the Arvin artillery? Did they keep out there and firing at all times?
Oh, yeah.
Or did they, when they were taking incoming, were they able to establish fire against where they
If they could see the thing, but identifying where it came from was hard. And also, we had an awful lot of air up here. And if the air could see it, they'd work. And, of course, you can't shoot air. You can't have the air and the artillery going into the same place. Arvin counter-battery fire has increased a lot as the weather has deteriorated, and we're dependent more on your, than we are air.
What about, didn't the 17 tag have an airborne chopper?
Right, the same street.
Was he directing this artillery?
No,
fire
he was not. He was an airborne coordinator. And the fire would be directed by all kinds of ways. Our CNC, once they found out on the 14th that it would work so well, we'd had one up there. He couldn't land, so he'd fly around. We'd have observers up in that. Four air controllers, both Vietnamese and American, different General Hill. Anybody that was up there and could adjust, in fact, adjust.
What role did Mr. Van play during the fighting?
Well, Mr. Van played a big one. Mr. Van was a very good man. And, he's a big loss around here. He was in here every day, you know. And he really knew what was going on, and he gave us an awful lot of support. He was if you're going to take the assets, Mr. Van was a definite asset. So was General One of them was always up here all the time, in the air. And they did an awful lot for us, really, both of them.
Has there ever been any confirmed number of how many tanks are knocked down up here?
Well, it's, yeah, it's been confirmed that we've seen, I think Colonel Bricker said he's seen 17. You have to ask him, he'll be here. I've only seen about four or five myself, and I haven't had the opportunity to go everywhere, you know, but, including the one we knocked out in the river up there, which got stuck, towing him, finish him off. I think Colonel Bricker's figure was 27, and Mr. Van's at one time, and that, this is hearsay.
Was these were all T-54s?
No.
PT-74s,
T-59s, and one PT-76 was in the lawn, but I don't know of anybody that ever saw it again. And Colonel Bricker may have.
How about any captured M-41s used against?
Yeah, there were three, I think. They were taken away. I better not say anything about that. I'd have to check the log. I'm not too clear on that point. But, the tank, they found they could stop it with the long. You look at this, when you go up here, you find one gun that was knocked out, one tank that was knocked out maybe 15 meters or less from an Arvin bunker, and his gun was still elevated like he was shooting down the street, you know, pike somewhere. Not for firing into a bunker. And Arvin got him with a log. And this one that's down in the stadium, he killed that with a log. So they were effective with the log.
Okay, one of the things that died down after the attack that began on the 26th, by what day would you say things quieted down again?
Oh, this is a guesstimate. By the 4th and the 6th of June is when they finally got the people out.
Yeah.
These people, once they got in there, of course, they were very good at digging, and they did just that. And it was house-to-house fighting up here, both in the southern part of the city. I'd say up somewhere in the 4th and 6th of June, they had the city restored. And of course, at the high point was in the 26th to the 28th or 9th in there. And then once then, it was just a matter of kicking them out.
Major Loving said that his regiment took over 100 KIA fighting from house to house.
Took 100 KIA?
Over. Yeah. At least 100. Weighted KIA, I guess, is a better word.
That'd be a pretty good estimate.
Yeah. They took a lot, did an awful lot of fighting.
An awful lot of house has a lot of awful clothes. And I don't think, of course, today, without battalion advisors, we're a little blinder than we used to be. And it's very hard to get out right where they were, you know. But once we could get around, and Major Lovings and Colonel McKenna that were up there, had, of course, they were closer than people down here. But you began to see just how hard it was and how well these people were dug in. And nobody can tell that from the air until they really get right down there. It was house-to-house and bunker fighting, which is pretty extensive for the attacker. And one of the big things is the amount of air they brought in over. After a while,
in the city,
well, not in downtown, no, but in the military camps is what they were, which are part of the northern part of Khantoum, but not really a part of the civilian city.
Talking about the hospital area, too.
Yeah, that area up there. And there were a lot of people in that hospital, and of course, by then it had ceased to be a hospital. It was a fortified position.
Where do you stand now as far as defense decisions, and what do you think is going to happen next?
I don't think anybody really knows. They say they're coming back. The indications, as far as I'm concerned, and here's where people will start to differ, as far as I'm concerned, it looks like they are coming back.
Why do you say that?
I say this because the movement that the CAV has found and that we've gotten from Chuhoys and escapees has been that there's a southern and eastern movement of resupplies and troops. The people that they've gotten with information have stated that they've been sent to block, to hold us, you know, in the town. And it just looks to me, and they've been ordered to do it, and whether they're capable of it is something else. I don't know that either. They were supposed to come on the 18th. Of course, they didn't come. I'm just giving it a personal opinion. It's just my opinion. If they do come, it'll be about 2 weeks from now. It's going to take them that long to get organized. The headquarters that we found, or any movement has been away from the town, but still coming. Movement of supplies and material this way, the headquarters away to get out of the way of our lights and this and that. That's a personal opinion.
What do you think about the air support? Were you satisfied with the
fight? Oh, yeah. That was a decisive factor. Sure was.
Did you get involved in any of it, or was it handled by the colonel?
Being the operations advisor, of course, it was necessary. And in the same room where they plotted them, Major Fleischer was the man that did the plotting. I can't say a whole lot about him because it's, they were plotted. I mean, that's a known fact, and they were used. And they were very, very effective. I'm sure of that, the way they were used, the way they were plotted. It took a lot of energy on both General Bottas part and the senior advisor and Major Fleischer and everybody to use the intelligence they had. And of course, once they got closer to town, the troop, the enemy, it was easier to know exactly where they were. I'm sure the strikes were more effective because if you know where they are and you put the bomb on them, it's a lot easier than guessing where they are when they're 15 clicks away. Well, I think that these two were definitely decisive back here. VNAP did a good job. I don't think anybody ought to discount them. They ought to be given full credit. They did a real fine job. When we put one of their A-1 pilots in for a board, he must have been 651s fired at him. He just kept right on going. And the bullets looked like they were going everywhere. He could see it right here. He knocked out one or two of them right then. They had shot one down before an A-1E, which was the pilot was picked up by, I think, the command and control helicopter from 4. Picked him up right away, landed in the field, they went down and picked him up. Attack air is what I think did the most damage to the enemy. But on the same token, they couldn't have done it if Arvin hadn't sat in his hole and held the enemy where he could be brought under fire by the attack air and the B-52. Gunships were effective. People in the open did a real good job. Looked like a flying circus around there. You know, the real small perimeter, everybody was working right outside. It was amazing.
Well, was there any instance of like a Tan-Tan with 22nd, the wire-guided missile?
No.
Was there any instance of any weapons such as this used by
Such as what?
Any weapons like this that the NBA employed? Any reports?
How about heat-seeking missiles?
Heat-seeking missiles, anything like this?
I didn't hear of any ground-to-ground. Allegedly, an Air Force F-4 was fired at east of town here by one of these Stella missiles. But I say allegedly. Nobody's ever backed it up. So we haven't had any here. Yeah.
And you would say then that the single most decisive factor would have been the air support, both BNF and U.S.?
No, I can't say that because the Air Force, I think it's a combination of two things that are equally important. One is Arvin's desire and ability to stay where he was and fight, which in fact held the enemy, so you could have a target to bring the air on. Without one, you're not going to have the other. If you didn't have the air, I think Arvin might have been in trouble, and they think so too. But without Arvin staying and fighting, the air wouldn't have had a target.
Well, was the generalship or leadership on the part of the Arvin commanders, was it outstanding in this instance, or were there still some lack?
Well, I just assume that Colonel Bricker taught him. I got opinions. You know, my counterpart was here the whole time, and he did a good job. And there are instances like anywhere else. It was an outstanding leadership provider. And there was, I just didn't get into that.
Anything else? Do you have any other comments to make, factually or otherwise, that might be some help for us to embellish what's in the journals?
Well, I think you've got to give a lot of credit to the private soldier in the Vietnamese Army. When he's properly led, he does a good job. I saw this in 65. I got hurt over here pretty badly, and three of them got killed, and five got wounded hanging onto my body, and then trying to get me out. I was impressed then by the soldier. And I'm still impressed by him.
What unit were you
with? I was with the Battalion Advisor in the 25th Army Infantry Division down in Long Island Province. And I think if you get to know the private soldier, he does a good job. All he needs is NCOs and officers to lead him, and when he has them, he does a good job. I think the 23rd Recon here, the people that went up to Tan Can the other day, you know, they were properly led. They did a good job. And when they're led right, they work.
How long had the 23rd Division been undergoing training? Had their
23rd Division, I don't remember exactly when it was formed. It's been around a while, but they've never until Khartoum ever served together as a division. The most they've ever had was maybe two regiments for a short period of time. The rest of the time they had one down in Son Mao, one in the Lot, and one up by Bemi Tuk and split up to Phunya. So until we got up here, just prior to the 14th, in fact, and again, I don't know if it's in the journal when they all actually closed here, they never had a division as a whole. And this was a learning experience for their logistical people, for their operations people to have to plan a whole division. And I think they did a pretty good job considering, you know, that they took it, it's just like never worked together before. Once they did this, our command and control problems really dropped. There wasn't bickering between the Airborne and the Rangers and us, you know, it was just one unit. And I think this was a factor for the benefit of the division to have everybody under General Bond in the division, all of them here, and not have to deal through people he didn't really know.
In other words, they did clearly define their lines of command and control.
Well, you bet. At the division with the three regiments, and this had never happened before, and with their own artillery and their own cav. And once you do this, and especially in their army, I think it really helps. You don't have the bickering, you know, the Rangers have this and the airborne fields that they come under Saigon and all this nonsense, whatever, you know. And I think that has to be counted in as one of the reasons that Khartoum stayed here. We had a whole division under one man, and the RFPF came under division with the sector chief controller.
Okay, this concludes the interview. Everything that has proceeded is confidential. This is 22 June 1972. Interview with Major Wade Loving, Senior Advisor to the 44th Regiment of the 23rd Armored Division in Khartoum. Go ahead.
Okay. The background behind this, the 44th was separated from the 23rd Division initially at Song Mao, which was operated as a separate regiment. Then it was moved up to An K to secure the An K Pass and retake it at what's the NVA had taken it back in April.
Were you under rock control when you retook the pass?
That's a negative. The AO line was right in the middle of the pass almost, and not quite. Just on the western side of the pass was the line of the AO. The rocks had a complete responsibility for the pass, although we assisted them to take it back when it came time to take it back.
Did you take many casualties?
Yes, we did. A recon company especially took a lot of casualties. The rest of the division not too well. It was very a very good operation. It was a combination of arming for the first time I've really seen them do it. Used a combination of armor and infantry very well. The operation consisted of the 3rd Armored Cav Regiment and the 44th. And it was a armored combination of tanks, APCs, and infantry, which was done in a very good way. Come on, buddy. Cut it off.
Hello, sir!
Okay, it was
roughly how many casualties did you take it on, Kay?
That was 50-something.
Okay.
Yeah.
How many wounded?
I've forgotten.
Really were you good. Reconstituted before you arrived up here?
Yeah, no, we were about, we got some replacements.
Sir? I tell you, the best thing to do, sir, is go around this way and go up over there.
You walk around it, sir.
Which way? Out the main road?
No, right here. You see, one tank right there.
We were halfway instituted, and after that, the XO and myself brought two battalions, as you were. Two battalions at this time were attached for operations at Pleiku. Our 1st and 4th battalions.
Who were they attached to?
They were attached to a provisional headquarters under the Corps commander for the defense of Pleiku. Mm-hmm. So what happened, the XO was called up in Songmao, and I, being a deputy at that time, came with him with a light CP, and we moved to Fire Base 42. We stayed there about a week, and then after that, we got the word to move up here and join the division.
Did you have any contact at Fire Base 42?
Negative. Negative mm-hmm. contact. Then after that, the other two battalions, which were still at Song Mao, where the regimental commander came forward about a week later, and then we were deployed up to Khantoum around about the 13th or 12th or 13th. And then immediately after we got here, the regiment was consolidated. Two battalions went north of town on the road, and one battalion went in the reserve around the CP.
Mm-hmm.
To be exact, the first day we were up on the road there, we were replacing Rangers. And we went in their CP, and we figured their CP was too close to the front line, to be exact, it was on the front line. We took 105 fire.
Was it observed fire?
It was observed. It was adjusted in. My bunker took a direct hit right over my head where I sleep. It happened, I wasn't there. And
you carried the bunker in?
Yep. It went caved in didn't go through the PSP, but the pressure broke a lot. It went around and pushed the PSP down. Okay, then after that, we moved back, and on the night of 14th, I guess it was about 4 o'clock in the morning, we got hit with armored and infantry attack up on the first two battalions.
This is a side of QL-14.
Right. And we got hit with armored and infantry, and they hollered tanks, and at that time, the next thing in the word I got was two tanks knocked out. So the Arvin had used the law and found out at close range it would stop the T-54 tank.
Uh-huh.
From there on, by the time daylight broke, we got plenty of attack air. I think we had everything we asked for. We got gunships, VNAP A1Es, F4s, I've forgotten the numbers sorted, but we put in attack air all day long. And at the end of the day, reestablished, got a hit again that night. Wasn't quite as heavy, but it broke off before daylight. What had happened, they got behind us. They had a ridge, they had an element in front of us, an element behind us, an element on our flank. Our flank was not secure. Other units had not joined us. And that's the night we used a Spectre, the C-130, uh-huh. Came in, and I adjusted all around the front of position that night, relaying them from the Arvin back to the regimental CO, back to me, and I talked to the thing and adjusted. The next morning we went out and we found them about 26 dead area where we'd put Spectre in with the 40
millimeter. Describe what you saw. How were they dressed?
They were NVA. They were dressed with a kind of a green uniform. They were real muddy, but they were green with the Ho Chi Minh sandals, AK-47s. And these were mainly sapper units. Some of them, the guy behind them was sappers. Not too many full automatic weapon crew served, but a lot of explosive charges trying to get in close to really do the guys in.
Uh-huh.
Now, if you see this area, there's a blue artillery coming here.
You better believe it.
My 292 up there, one day I had two of them cut down at the same time from around hitting right here. It's a long ways away, too. And so after that, we got hit one more time. It was the third attack was kind of weak, and at that time, we were put in reserve and called back to this location. Be careful walking around here. You see, these M79, they're highly go off, isn't it? Okay, we came back and replaced the 45th who was here, and they came up and took our place. The road I'm talking to you about is right up there. You see that road right there?
Right.
See those woods over there? Regimental CP was in those woods. Up in front of it on the other little slope hill there is another road is
we're
where
pointing
I'm
talking north.
I'm pointing northwest right now.
Okay.
We were over there in that batch of woods, and we're talking about, that's how close pontoon we're talking about. We're talking about 3 or 4 kilometers.
Okay. Right ridge from here, right over there?
Right.
Over right there. Behind us.
And what happened was, the VC came in from that way, got behind us with troops, and they got in front of us, and they came in from this side. And I think they really planned to do us in, but the gunships came in there and really, we were putting in Cobras right on top of our troops. They were in the bunkers, and they called in, and the Cobras did a beautiful job. And Spectre at nighttime. Okay, we moved back here in reserve, somewhere around the 27th, 28th. And the first night we got back here, it took us 2 days to make a swap, 45th. It was 3 days, correction, 3 days to swap over. Arvin takes the next day to do it. So we came back here and came in reserve. And we only occupied, as you see right here. And we left this area up here open because it's supposed to be a perimeter around the place. 45th and 53rd supposed to have a perimeter on the outside of us. So we weren't really worried about a main threat back here. We were supposed to be in reserve. Okay, that morning, which I think was 28, about 5 o'clock, guy hollered, tanks and infantry. Well, there's the tank. You see it right there. That's the line. And they really were eating us up. General Hill, to be exact, came in. Thank God he got up early that morning. He came in with 2 gunships, just a break of day. And he came in and brought those Cobras. That perimeter line you see right there is on a 9-0 grid line. And we told him anything north of 9-0 was free game. And he brought his Cobras down. And it's so close with a gunship that he separated the infantry from the tanks. That made the tanks sitting ducks for our people. But they were initially solid with infantry. This is an artillery position over here. And they were in the perimeter. They had broke our perimeter over here. The reason I know why is because there was a building there, but they've taken it down, you see right here. And I, as late as 7 o'clock, I came up out of the hole.
In the morning?
Right. I came up out of the hole, came over here, and the enemy had a machine gun in that building there, firing away the artillery over here. And I went back and got an M79 from a soldier, came back up and got right there. Got an M79 right over here. Got two of them. Went over and the guy went over and pushed up the machine gun. His body was still over there, covered up with dirt. Shot him, I wanted it. This is late as 7 o'clock. We were still in no damn perimeter. Our boys were still fighting like mad here. As you can see, here, that tank is pretty close.
Yep.
Was
it a T-54?
Yeah, it's a T-54. But the point to notice here is the gun is not elevated for direct fire. All of them are that way. I don't understand. They use them for indirect fire out in the field to shell Kontoon. And they came in here. Every tank I've found, which I've personally seen 4 in this area, every one of them has got an elevation for indirect fire. As you can see, it's not lowered. And I think their threat was to come in here and scare the troops and run over them. And figured they'd break and run as they did at TAM camp. But it didn't work. As you can see, there's a shell, 100-millimeter shell. The gun was full of it. One tank had 1 round in there. And you see right there's elevation. And as you can see, a little hole right beneath the little green mark there.
Uh-huh.
That's where some gun sitting right there in that hole. Shot him with a wall. Knocked him out. There was a captain in the North Vietnamese Army in there. We shot him and took his K-54.
Get any prisoners?
No.
What are you going to do with the K-54?
Regimental commander got it. I get the next one. Okay. Right here is where they were. All the way down this line here, starting here, down that way, all the way through these buildings. And the fight that morning was between these holes and those buildings. And as I said, it broke through over here. Back into here. And we'll walk the line here. Enemy and the friendlies about 50 yards apart, another little strip of road here. On the and took us 14 days. Starting here to go north with initially one battalion started on this side, and we weren't making any progress, so we tried to go around through over here, flank them to the east side, and they had such a strong force over there, it had several 51 calibers up there. We could not get in from that direction, even using tanks because of barbed wire, et cetera. We could not, the 41 tank could not get over. Yeah, we had some airstrikes in there, and very few, though. Buildings looked like it had a lot because the fight was so close together, the airstrikes really couldn't be used. We got, I think, about six sorties of air in there, mainly A1Es. One A1E came in to give us some support one day and got shot out right here because they had plenty of automatic weapons.
Where's the plane at?
He went over this way and bailed out. But they had about eight 51 calibers supporting this area to include 12.7s, 14s, everything. Through the whole area, the regiment CT was over here. And this water tower I was telling you about is where they crawl, snipers climbed up in there and fried out in the morning and daylight, crawled up at nighttime. And these buildings at this time were solid buildings. This was all done by artillery and mortar. Now, we did use artillery a lot.
Direct fire?
No, right over here, not far away. We started here, 14, we started out, we tried to flank them to the east, we couldn't flank them, we decided to come back and flank them from the west. Well, that took about 3 days to get in there because we wanted to move at nighttime. And they did move at nighttime and had to cut wire and stuff to get through and get in position. And then we flanked them. All this time, the VC were capable of resupplying, taking their wounded out, bringing fresh soldiers in from over here because they secured this flank here, which they could go right out in those woods over there. And that outside perimeter, it just wasn't there. So they were resupplying and taking the wounded out and everything. Plus, there's a lot of ammunition was left up there by the airborne. You can see all the grenade boxes there. I'll show you later. With nothing but boxes. So MVA was grabbing our grenades. So we influenced through myself and the thing. The only way to do this thing is at nighttime. So that's when we started moving at nighttime. As you can see from the east side, they had it boxed in. They had a battalion or two battalions over here, battalion up here, and another battalion up here. And they attacked from all sides at the same time. These guys held this flank over here. And I can show you mounds of dirt out there. We finally got them to cover up dead bodies, but they killed quite a few out there. Airstrikes, automatic weapons. And the area was, had about, up in this area was four automatic anti-aircraft weapons. To include this compound over here. And over here, for four more.
You're going to have to make a sketch of this if you can, and then you can come back and correlate it with the tape.
And let me then give you one of those little maps we got. We got a city map, city map, and it really shows you. This is a 9-0 line I was telling you about, this road. Right down through here. Okay, you want to walk up here?
Sure.
Not for your tape. One day I was out here down in the corner there, you see a truck down there.
Right.
The guys were in that building there. I was throwing hanging eggs, their little arms couldn't reach. And I was down there, that's an invention I'm gonna capitalize on and send it to the infantry board. What it is four of them with a box of sand with C4. So this is where the battle was, started right here.
What do you have out here now?
We got a company up there.
How many tanks were in your area?
Four.
There's two we've seen so far.
Yeah.
What are the other two?
One of them, by the way, was out of gas. Never was knocked out. Just gave out of gas. Bad planning on the bad guy's fault. Yeah. All we did was put gas in and drove it out of here. There was a boot strap with a couple of grenades inside. This tank, the tanks, by the way, I don't understand why the NBA did it. He brought the tank in through a build-up area, which channelized them into the street areas of the town, of the hospital complex. Which this tank got up here and got where he had to turn around. And when he tried to turn around, they hit him.
Where'd they hit him?
I think this mainly right here was hitting the fuel tank. So some, I haven't figured out where he's at, but he burns first night. They hit him. And you see the body over there. It's part of a body left over there.
Deployed in pairs, or did they operate singly? Were they mutually supporting?
They came up in pairs, but not mutually supporting. One was over there going down that street, and this one's coming down this street, you know. I haven't figured out yet.
You never heard of Fort Knox, I suppose.
They're
I guess the head of the armor, the Russian army, is going to get relieved.
Yeah.
They did the same damn thing at Anlach.
They'd have come across that field there to our east and started deploying 100 millimeter guns over there about 500 meters away, which they could have.
You'd have had trouble.
We'd have been a long day. It would have been a long day.
Like I said, there's still a lot of bright stuff in here. Here's a bunker. This type thing I'm telling you about. See that?
Uh-huh. Underground bunker. Here's another one right here. I can show you.
Major Loving further. This is a continuation of the interview on the other tape. Major Loving further states that the airborne tow helped destroy the other two tanks of the total of four that were attacking his positions. The two were total of six. The two were behind him. He also stated while I was changing the tape that they had, it was mainly a hand grenade fight, bunker to bunker. The artillery, once they began their house-to-house, bunker-to-bunker fighting wasn't really that effective.
Too close. Okay, this bunker here you see, they were in, they policed up about 32 bodies in this bunker. This bunker you see here, I went up with a helicopter or a command ship or a tow, and we used a tow against the bunker. We hit three of the big bunkers here that were throwing them up. When we went up, this bunker here was one of them. You can see, it was a heavily built bunker, and we took the tow, and we hit it from above, plus we hit two other bunkers that were giving us trouble. And with the tow missile, which, pretty well did a job on the bunkers, but we still had some of them. We could not identify that were inside buildings. The bunkers built within the buildings that the house, the wounded people doing a rocket attack, and we could not see. And the tow was not affected. I'm carrying now, John, this is a third tank that Army knocked out. And also show you the side which our 1st Battalion maneuvered to flank the guys. Later, the 45th Regiment sent a battalion around to come in from the north side, which I think was the final straw on the enemy withdrawing from the area, realizing he was flanked on three sides.
Was it a 500-pound bomb?
Negative. That's a 700-pounder at least, and I wouldn't be surprised if it were 1,000. I haven't had some Air Force guys here, and they said 1,000-pound bomb.
Yeah.
It's quite a hole here. That would make years leak if you landed in the same bunker. This would be the infirmary, inside infirmary.
Is this the hospital you're
from? Yeah, they're still in. It's the pharmacy, excuse me. It's a pharmacy which one of the lieutenants who were the 45th came up here. You see, said it was full of medicine at the time. Okay, we're on the central east-west side, which is the area which our 1st Battalion maneuvered around to attack from. As you can see, it's got many layers of concertina wire, mines, and et cetera. These guys had attacked through to get to the enemy position on the west side. But it had a little indefinite from the enemy position if he was back from the perimeter. So this is where our 1st Battalion came up and put pressure on this side. I'm about to carry now to the third tank.
which had pulled into a building to avoid being seen by air or by tow, which did a pretty good job because tow looked for him all one morning. Mr. Van assisting him, trying to find it with the guys on the ground. And we never did find this tank to destroy. Arvin was given credit for the kill, but I don't know exactly. Was it attack air, artillery, tow, or wall? The Arvin said it was knocked out with a wall. So we give him credit. The guys went up there. There she is. Kind of bunker. Only we captured any in this area. None of them surrendered up here.
How many total do you think he killed over here?
I actually counted bodies around 40. But I think we killed much more than that because they had the ability, as I said, to evacuate and bring in fresh recruits and food and ammunition every night. So I don't really think that, I think we killed much more than that. I think it was probably I think in the end it was a company reinforced who had the mission do or die. Hold at all costs, and that's what they did.
Is this anywhere near where they wanted to surrender that was read about the newspaper?
No, the guys wanted to surrender up here on the road.
I always could say near a couple of clicks.
That came over my radio. My tank regimental commander came over and said, just talk to VC, they want to surrender. And by the time we got it all started and instigated, told division about it, the guy called back to told my regimental commander, don't transmit so much. And he cut him off. And I never heard from him again.
What do you think happened?
I think it was a radio operator trying to surrender the company. And I think when the leaders found out about it, they shot him. I wouldn't think it was with it. I think it's trapped. But this is the other tank's right over here, Daniel, on the other side of here. This tank, you see, just drove through that building. Yeah. As you notice again, the damn guns.
Did he back in or drive in forward?
He drove in forward. Was gun to first.
Arvin was going to buckle and run, and then his infantry would have an easy job.
That's exactly the way I see it. And it worked at Tam Camp.
Yeah, I worked at Tam Camp.
Worked against the 22nd Division, but it didn't work against the 23rd Division. So the first night we got hit, this might be interesting, we captured one of the tank drivers of the tanks. And during interrogation, he stated that they were told that they were occupying a position. It was already occupied by friendly infantry, and they just drove up there. And they had no intention of fighting a war. And then when they got there, there wasn't any infantry. To be exact, the infantry was behind the tank.
Somebody didn't get to work.
No, I personally think what it was, it was the first night now, and the results of Tam Cam were the tanks was, again, the infantry, I heard, was 20 minutes behind the tanks. And they figured this drive up there were four tanks. Online, and with the tank drivers thinking they're going up to a friendly assembly area, and Arvin seeing them would run, and then the infantry would be able to secure without much trouble. But then when the 44th Regiment didn't run, and which I might say is a proud regiment, they got credit right now, verified by Americans, 14 tanks knocked out by laws, are the MX-202. So these are not Arvin counts. These are verified by Americans. And when they knocked out their tanks that day, then the infantry came up. So this tank driver stated, the one we captured from the 320th of NVA Division, they thought they were going into a position that was already secured by infantry. And this drove up there. And maybe the possibility was that they were using NVA to say, we'll send the tanks up there. Arvin's going to bug out. Can't really argue with his tactics. It worked pretty well with Tam Cam. Also, I don't know if it's been stated by other people you've interviewed, but the 320th NVA Division and the 2nd NVA Division, which were against us here, secured quite a few pieces of artillery from the 22nd Arvin Division, 105s, 155s, and... I don't know how much ammunition they got captured, but there seemed to be no shortage of 105 and 155 being fired at us during the battle.
Quite accurately, I think they had people prepared to train to use our guns, our sticks, even use the lay against us. I have a hole up there right outside of my bunker there. It was hit with a fusillade, 155. Being an artillery, I went out and took a crater analysis and saw where the burrs were on the artillery round. And it was definitely 155. So, not to include the 122s he brought down with him.
Did the tanks fire at all when they came in?
They did not fire direct fire. Tanks fired indirect fire when I was up on the hill there. I observed them firing indirect fire one night out here to the northeast of town before these same tanks here were out there. And they came in and they fired. Wait a minute, I want to check on something.
Just putting gas in it, and we drove it out.
Say again on that tank.
The tank was in the area, was in a building up here ahead, which we never knew was in here from the first time, from the beginning of battle till we occupied. So we could not find out where it was hit anywhere. There was booby traps inside, a couple of grenades were booby trapped. We got those out. We brought some Harmon M41s up here and pulled them out of the building area here, took it downtown. And finally, all we need to do is put gas in it, or diesel, and they're driving the tank around town. It never was hit or destroyed. Arvin Cass having a ball, man. They just get that big tank there. They like that big tank. Also, the bad guys were in here. But the 45th Regiment, I'm telling you, the last battalion to come in the area came in from the north here.
Yeah.
Get this way. Started sawing these guys here. And the guys down here realized, well, we got guys here, we got guys here, we got only one door left open, and we better take it before it closes. And they took off.
Let me further state it that, and I concur that this is ideal terrain, defensive, commanding terrain for the city of Tontoon, highest point. From which you can control the city.
Is there any specific
control
name?
The airfield too?
And also the airfield.
Any specific name given to this place?
I don't know. There's bad guys all in those buildings there. That's where we try to flank them around. We try to go around the east side.
Uh-huh.
We couldn't get in there.
Yeah, the water tower just on the outside of the perimeter area, which during the height of the battle, Major Loving states, was infiltrated by snipers who had a very effective position they could command the entire battle area from. It was destroyed almost totally by direct fire artillery, 155 and 105.
They got in there at nighttime. They couldn't get in at daytime, but nighttime they come in. So at nighttime, because we were still at this position.
If you look up there, let's see now.
Okay, see that machine gun ammunition on the belt up there?
Uh-huh.
See that piece of PST sticking up right to the right?
Right.
Machine gun ammunition.
Any bodies up there?
I haven't been up there to look. I see some bodies down here on the ground. And 75 shell cases. You know where they carry them around in? There's one hole there, the hell one door in the other building. Sheep 75 at it.
They knew what they were doing, huh?
They knew what they were doing. They were all in those grass out there. The closest one got to us was killed on that mound of dirt right there. He got in a hole there and couldn't get out. The sun came out and he tried to come up out the whole sun. And there was 300 guys on this wall shooting at him. He didn't have a chance, man. Every man on the wall here. They found him out there, and he tried to make a run. The whole wall, it was like, remember that movie, Sundance Kid? You remember the end scene when they were all standing up there? He tried to, whole Mexican army. That's where this wall was. 300 guys up here, and there's one guy here trying to run out of there.
Any questions?
Took the prisoners over here about four. Right in here, snatched their ass out of there.
How well fed?